Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With your host, Andrew Donaldson, this is Heard Tell.
Welcome back to Heard Tell. Thank you so much for giving us the most precious thing you have, your time. So we try to do what we always do, turn down the noise of the news cycle, get to the information that really matters to discern the times we live in. And that last bit is what we're going to be doing today. Discerning what's going on in the wider world is something we take time to try to do as much as we can. We look, especially in American media and politics and culture and the spaces that folks like me inhabit, where I write and do media, we get real insular on American things. It's pretty lonely if you're a foreign policy person the last few years. There's just not a lot of appetite for foreign policy. America's in a little bit of an isolationist phase. There's a lot of reasons for that. We'll discuss some other time, but there's really big stuff happening in the world. We know, and we have covered on this show over the last few years with many guests in many different ways, that Vladimir Putin, who's the dictator of Russia, is one of the worst actors in the country. Now, some of it's really apparent, like when he invaded the Ukraine war, where he's just brutalizing Ukraine's people. Ukraine is a sovereign country. He said, they're not a real country. We're just going to go in there and do whatever we want. The West, we can debate how they've responded to this crisis back and forth, but that's one of the big obvious things. There's other smaller things. The Putin regime has assassinated dissidents and journalists. They've used radioactive poisoning. People keep randomly falling out of windows who happen to be. Then there's people like we're going to talk about today, the former head of Wagner, who gets his jet shot down. Oh, I'm sorry. It crashed, air quotes. This is a brutal regime, and they do brutal things. But those are kind of the things that actually make the headlines. For years and years now, though, they've been doing stuff that hasn't been getting headlines, but is brutalizing thousands of people, killing thousands of people, displacing maybe as many as millions of other people. And it's how this regime helps fund what they're doing. Now, they have vast resources with things like oil. That's how they keep parts of Europe under their thumb, because they need the energy, the gas and oil from Russia. But the Wagner group also takes money out of Africa. And the way they're doing it, the Wagner mercenary group, which has gotten some play, it has changed over the last 2-3 years. There's been big developments with it. They go down to Africa. They'll prop up a strongman regime in a certain country in exchange for the resources of that country, usually gold or mineral rights or other things like this. This is the subject of something called the Blood Gold Report. A group of our friends that have an overlap, we're going to have David Clement in. He's one of a team of about 5 other people that put this together. But the Blood Gold Report details how this happened, how Wagner, however you want to say it, the Wagner group, mercenaries is not completely accurate, but they are hired guns. They're a paramilitary outfit. It's who Putin uses to do foreign policy stuff that they don't want to use the actual Russian military to do for various reasons. There's a military component to it. It has overlap with the Russian military. There's an economic component to it. They use a lot of shell companies to move this money, to launder this money around, including places like the Middle East and the UAE, to launder money, both physical things like gold and actual cash payments through many, many front groups. But then there's the human cost of all this. These countries, Mali, Sudan, Central African Republic, there's others. Those are the three we're going to focus our conversation on. The people are just brutalized because of this. First of all, the mining that is done is not to the Western standards of anything remotely involving safe. They don't care about the people at all. But secondly, anybody that opposes these regimes, that opposes Wagner, that comes in, that opposes the strongmen that rely on Wagner's military might and the Russian support to keep them in power, give them arms, give them things like this, they just get killed. They get massacred. There's amazing amounts of violence in Africa. And frankly, the West just doesn't care. It doesn't make the news. There's been genocide in Africa. There's been famine. There's been civil war pretty much my entire lifetime in different places. The West doesn't care for whatever reason, for a multitude of reasons. But we should care. And the thing is, you cannot take something like Russia and what Vladimir Putin is doing in a vacuum. One of our core tenets of this program that we try to always do, things do not happen in a vacuum. They happen in a sequence. If you want to understand why Russia is in Ukraine, you have to back up to how they've been fighting Ukraine for 9 years at least. Really, they've been fighting them for a couple hundred years at least, longer in a lot of ways. You have to understand Putin's mindset of wanting to rebuild, not the USSR. That's not what he's really after. He wants the old Russian empire back. You have to understand that when Russia went into Ukraine, it's because he'd already been fighting in Ukraine. They had already taken Crimea. You have to go back to what they did in Georgia. You have to go back to what they did in Chechnya and another long list. All those things built up and enabled them to do the Ukraine invasion. If you want to understand what they're doing in Africa, we're going to walk through it on this program. You have to understand where Wagner Group came from, what they're used for, how Putin uses them to project power. But really, it's more about money than the power, because they're taking billions of dollars of gold out of these countries and shipping it back to Russia in various forms. But to understand that, you have to understand what happened in Syria and how Wagner came to power in Syria and how they brutalized hundreds of thousands of people, displaced million more in Syria. And once again, most of the West didn't care. Because who cares? They're not us. We got our own problems, right? Well, the problem with enabling problems elsewhere is eventually they wind up hitting you somewhere where you do got to pay attention to it. Western Europe's starting to maybe wake up a little bit to it. But America, we still have it. So we're going to take some time to walk through this Wagner stuff, walk through the Blood Gold Report. You can find it at bloodgoldreport.com, at Blood Gold Report on the Twitter and other social media. We're going to link to the whole thing. It's a PDF. You can search it. It's wonderful stuff. And David Clement, our very good friend who we've had on this program multiple times over the years up in Canada, he's the news director for the News Forum News Network up in Canada. But in his other capacities, he has spent a lot of time working on things like authoritarian regimes and freedom movements around the world. And this is a little bit of background that we have to go through, because you got to understand the foundation of why something like Wagner gets built in the first place and how they operate. The procedure, they go into a country where they suppress the population, they suppress the press, they start spreading misinformation, and then they brutally just kind of take over everything by partnering with a local strongman. And they prop up an authoritarian regime so that they have the cover to go in and strip the resources from the land and brutalize the people. You would think some of our friends in the West who want to scream about colonizing would be all over these kind of stories. You would think some of our friends in the West who really want to talk a lot about freedom and bang their chest about fighting for truth, righteousness, and good old-fashioned values might care about something like this. These are stories that go beyond the partisan politics we fight about here in America, or at least they should. So we're going to spend some time on this Blood Gold Report today, how Putin is funding the wicked things he's doing by doing even more wicked things in places that, frankly, we need to care more about. Because if you don't care about the human condition everywhere, you're going to have a hard time having moral authority to care about the human condition anywhere, especially in the privilege we enjoy in the West. David Clement. The Blood Gold Report, talking Wagner, Russia, and the stealing of African resources to fund the wars and the ambitions of Vladimir Putin and the Russian oligarchs. All that's coming up next on Herd Tell.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Hurt Tell. Okay, I've been wanting to cover this topic for a while. We've covered it in the news, but we haven't been able to really dig into it in depth. But a group of our friends, friends of the program, friends of the show, friends of ours, have done an excellent report on it called the Blood Gold Report. We're going to get into it with David Clement. You've seen him on the program many times before. He's the news director up for the News Forum up in Canada. He's also a senior fellow at 21 Democracy. There's a list of people involved. We'll get to them in a minute, but we're going to talk to you about it, Dave. Appreciate the time, my friend.
Thank you very much.
This group of folks, I follow almost all of them, so I was already aware of it. When you put a team together to get into this, I was struck by the background and the diversity of the background of these folks. You have an African expert. You got a humanitarian expert. You've done a lot of work outside of some of your commentary stuff, but you do a lot of on authoritative regimes. That's kind of one of the things you've studied a lot over the years. Mm-hmm. It really does take a diverse background of people to dig into a subject like this because it covers so much ground because you've got an authoritarian regime. It's an economic ploy for money. Economics is a nice way of saying it, stealing money. There's a huge military component. There's geopolitics involved. You really do need that kind of a broad base to get into this because it's such a mess to try to explain, and it covers so many different areas.
Yeah, and it's it is quite a team that's been put together. The group of us who I mean, as you can understand, with the length of the report, took quite a bit of time to put all of the pieces together and frame it in a way that was understandable for a general audience and policymakers in Canada, the U.S., and the EU as well. So it's been quite a journey so far, and not to pat ourselves on the back, but I feel like it's a bit of a dream team of folks who've helped put this together.
Now, the way we have to start in on this, the Blood Gold Report, we're linking to the entire thing. Read the whole thing. It's a very deep subject, but it's in plain language. It's easy to understand. It's well laid out. We're dealing with Russia. We know Vladimir Putin is the dictator of Russia. We know he has the elections where he gets 90. He was gracious and went down to 93% this election. I guess he really wanted to show off a little bit. Russia is not a normal country. And I want to be real careful here. When I say Russia today, mostly I'm going to be talking about the Russian regime, Vladimir Putin and his thugs, and his oligarchs. The Russian people are a little bit separate from that. Just want to lay that out first. So when I'm saying Russia, I'm mostly talking about Putin and the regime here. It's not ran like a normal country. It has the trappings of state. It's a huge country. Obviously, it has vast oil and other resources. It has a big military, but it's not run like a normal country. It's not even run like a normal dictatorship. It has an oligarchy that has propped up Putin. It has a lot of criminal elements. And that's how you have to explain the Wagner piece, because Wagner is a very unique thing for a very unique country. So when we say dictatorship, yeah, it is, but this has some unique principles we need to understand to get to the Wagner piece, isn't it?
Yeah. It's one part corrupt dictatorship, one part kleptocracy, would be the best way to describe it, between Putin, the oligarchs, and the Wagner forces. On Wagner, they are essentially the ugly private military, the PMC arm of the Kremlin. They are the ones responsible for the worst of the worst in Ukraine, but also the worst of the worst all throughout Africa and other areas. And what a lot of people didn't realize, and we found this out in the conversations we had after publishing the report, is the death of Yevgeny Prigozhin didn't mean that the Wagner forces went away. I think some kind of assumed that, oh, well, there was this rift between these mercenaries and Putin, and there was the whole threat of Prigozhin threatening to march onto Moscow, and then he winds up with his plane falling out of the sky. Therefore, the Wagner forces are no longer. That is not the case. They are still functioning alive and well and dipping their toes into domestic and regional conflicts all throughout Africa, which is really where the concept of blood gold comes from, is their operations in we looked at three countries, and specifically the Central African Republic, Sudan, and Mali. It's required a lot of education to just inform and remind people that the Wagner forces still exist and they still are wreaking havoc around the world, regardless of the death of Yevgeny Prigozhin.
Now, it's important, and you started out this, I think it's the first or second page of the Blood Gold Report. Before his death, though, one of the things with Yevgeny Prigozhin was he actually came out, and of course the Kremlin approved this or he wouldn't have done it. They came out and admit that he was the head of Wagner, and Wagner was what everybody has always said it was. Certain countries have now labeled them as a terrorist organization. They're actually on trial in Poland right now for terrorist acts. Everybody kind of knew what it was, but part of the forgiven piece is they had to finally admit what they were, and then with his death, air quotes here because it was an assassination, let's all be adults here, he was taken out, they just decided to shoot the plane down and make it clean instead of shoving him out a window like they normally do. But since his death, the whole point was they admitted what it was, and then the Kremlin has just kind of absorbed it back in and took control back over it for the purposes you just listed. And that's a very important starting point to all this.
Exactly. Basically absorbed it into their modus operandi around the world. It still exists. It just exists in a different form. And the air quotes death of Prigozhin have not changed that. And that's really why it matters so much more now, because they are an arm of the Kremlin. We have to look at their actions abroad in the context of Putin's goals elsewhere, whether that be Ukraine or anywhere else where he may have his sights set on. And so that's where they become really important as that function or that arm of, at the end of the day, Russian armed forces. And that's where we kind of start with our analysis and some of our reporting on those three countries I mentioned.
Yeah, David Clement with the Blood Gold Report, how the Kremlin is using Wagner to steal billions of dollars out of Africa. This is an important part, too, of what Wagner is, because they call it a mercenary force. They like that terminology. It's used sometimes as a standing army. They tried to use them in Ukraine some. We saw what happened with the coup. I don't think we'll be seeing that again anytime soon. That's not what they really do. The one time they stood up against the U.S. Army at Deir al-Zor in Syria, they sent about 500 people against the U.S. forces there, and they only got about half of them back to zero casualties. They got absolutely wiped out. Mm-hmm. That's not what really they do. But what they're doing in Africa, what they did in Syria, that's what they're made to do. They're made to go into places that don't really have stand up, fight up armies. They're kind of that in between gray zone between, you know, civilian militias, mercenaries, and a standing army. We have to go to Syria to understand what they're doing in Africa right now, though, because despite the U.S. giving them an ass kicking, that was a great, great victory for not only Wagner, but the system that Putin and Russia wants to use to project power. That's the lesson they learned in Syria. They were enabled in Syria, and that's how they get into Africa. We got to go through that piece to understand it, right?
Yeah, and you make a very good point, is that they're not just hired guns. How they operate, and this is important in the context of, let's say, Syria or these three African countries, is everything from funding disinformation campaigns to stifling the press in the countries in which they're operating to providing, in air quotes, security services and propping up authoritarian regimes. And then there's a huge corporate kind of shell company function to this as well, where that they then dig their claws into whatever resources there are and siphon money off for the Kremlin that way. And so what we've seen is this really nasty exchange of, again, air quotes, security services, which includes all sorts of other nasty things domestically, in exchange for keeping these dictators in power and ensuring that they're insulated from pressure, either both domestically and internationally. And so very often when the Wagner forces end up in a country, they set their sights on the local population in many of these instances in order to help insulate whoever their dictator client is from opposition, from protest, from basically anything that would potentially threaten the ability for that individual to stay in power.
Yeah, David Clement with the Blood Gold Report. You laid out four steps to this process that you just described. They suppress opposition. They spread disinformation. Anybody that's online and has social media is familiar with the Russian disinformation campaign, or you should be if you're not. Mm-hmm. You need to look it up, kids. You are the subject matter of Russian disinformation, whether you know it or not, if you have any kind of social media account. They spread disinformation. They silence independent media. And then the fourth step is they start terrorizing the civilians. This is the pattern over and over again. So when we're talking about Sudan, Mali, the Central African Republic, various other places they're going in and out of. It's always the same model where they use this paramilitary mercenary force to do those four things to prop up whoever the local strongman they're going to go through for. And mm-hmm. the exchange of goods there is going to be the resources, gold, oil, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And we see that playbook implemented over and over. And although we just focused on these three countries, I mean, the coup in Niger is likely going to end up being the exact same playbook. That's not the subject of our reporting, but as you see kind of unrest spread throughout that part of Africa, you're seeing the calling cards of Russian influence and the Wagner mercenaries throughout. And so we're going to continue to see this, unfortunately, spread if something isn't done about it. If that four-step process is allowed to just run rampant through Africa, we're going to see the just complete erosion of the rule of law in many of these countries. You're going to see dictators propped up with the backing of Wagner and the Kremlin. You're going to see the erosion of whatever free press exists in these countries or civil society groups who oppose the authoritarian regimes they're then forced to live under. And then ultimately that ends up with violence and violence against the domestic population. And we've seen that time and time again in Sudan, in the CAR, in Mali, where a number of investigations, whether UN or otherwise, report civilians being killed, just systematic killing of innocent civilians whose crime is nothing more than not wanting to live under the authoritarian dictator who's been propped up.
That David Clement Blood Gold report. The economic part of this has to be dealt with as well, because these are things we used to watch the old drug cartel movies. We're like, well, we're going to get vertically integrated. That's what Wagner and Russia has done with these. And they use a lot of shell companies. There's a economic that you have legitimate fronts. That's the only way to explain it. You have front companies, shell companies that do things like take over a mine or take over a resource or take over an airport, some kind of infrastructure even. They use those as the frontage. They use Wagner as the muscle. They run it all through the local government that they're propping up, whoever the strong man happens to be. The economic component of this, using businesses as fronts, is something that is very important to understanding what's going on here.
Yes. It is very much like what you would expect out of like a financial crime novel or some movie made about whoever the bad guys are, using shell companies to basically try and mask their nefarious actions. And so we see this across the board in these three countries where shell companies are purchased. Ultimately, that's where gold is in the instance we're talking about, but it's not limited to gold. Gold is then siphoned through there. It mysteriously somehow ends up in Russia, and that is a way for the Kremlin to generate funds, also avoid sanctions, and essentially keep the war machine going, despite Western efforts so far to try and kneecap Putin and the ability to keep their invasion of Ukraine ongoing. And so it's probably too niche to get into the hyper specifics of what we reported on, just by virtue of the names and of companies that have changed or changed hands and all of that over the time in which we studied the issue. What we see is a very intricate system of shell companies who end up paying political staffers, who end up paying the security services, let's say, for a president or dictator in one of these countries. Shell companies who then become the corporate structure where gold goes legally, in air quotes, funnels through and then gets to ultimately, let's say, somewhere like the United Arab Emirates to be washed. And so it's a very deep web of intricacies here. And it's that classic shell game of corporate structures that are used and renamed and ownership changes and companies in name only more often than not.
Yeah. David Clement, Blood Gold Report. I'm an old transportation guy, so I find it interesting how the actual mechanics of this works. You just alluded to some of it. Gold's really heavy. Just physically, it's a heavy metal. When you mine it, it has to be refined. Gold bars don't come out of the ground. They don't grow on trees. You got to make those gold bars, and you got to ship that stuff. Mm-hmm. How they're physically getting it in and out of the country is a huge part of this, because you can't, like you just mentioned, it's not like you can just FedEx this stuff. It's big, it's heavy. It takes basically, frankly, in this military-grade equipment to move it. We have the photos. Some of them are in the port. They use basically military transport that's been provided by Wagner and others to move this stuff. They have to physically mine it, physically pick it up, physically refine it, and then physically ship it somewhere else, either to a third party. You mentioned in the Middle East, there's a couple different countries that'll launder this money for them, or to eventually get it back to Russia. That part of it is very important, because logistically, gold has always been really hard to move around. That's one of the reasons it's really valuable. It's really hard to mine. Another reason it's really valuable. they seem to have almost made an art form out of not only moving this stuff around, but doing it and making it disappear in the middle of the process.
Yes. Yeah. There are some examples from our report. If we look at Sudan, so something like 32.7 tons of gold in Sudan were unaccounted for in 2021, and it's largely believed that it's Wagner smuggling is the primary reason for that deficit. So I mean, at a market rate of 60 million per ton, that could be as much as 1.9 billion if those figures are correct. And it's important to highlight here, if you look at Sudan, so 32.7 tons of gold were unaccounted for. The official exports of gold from Sudan is 34.5 tons in that same time period. So essentially half of the gold mined out of Sudan is potentially ending up in this web of Russian influence. And I mean, in February of 2022, a Russian cargo plane was about to take off from Khartoum airport. Its declared cargo was cookies, which is not a typical export from Sudan. And I mean that in no offense to the fine cookie manufacturers in Sudan. But what was found was a ton of gold hidden beneath the boxes of those cookies. And the Sudanese authorities at the time believed that it was one of at least 16 smuggling flights conducted involving Russian military registered planes traveling from Khartoum to Syria. And Syria is important because that's where Russia operates a major airbase. And so that is one aspect of, in the Sudanese example, how they're getting gold out of the country they're taking it from, and then how it ends up in either in Russia or elsewhere. And it's important to highlight here that there have been reports that, so one of the drones, Shahed or Shahid drone, that the Russians commonly have used in Ukraine, they're originally from Iran. And I was always wondered, well, how did the Russians manage to buy all of these drones from Iran? What were they paying with? There have been increasing reports that it is likely they paid for those drones in gold. And where did they get the gold from? Well, it's more likely than not coming from the countries that they exploit in Africa and funnel the gold out. And so it's not just a scenario where you have, okay, the Kremlin is doing bad things, but there's no real direct link to their efforts in Ukraine. There certainly is. They're using funds and gold to purchase the military equipment that's wreaking havoc on Ukraine as we speak.
David Clement, the Blood Gold Report, along with a group of other folks. A good way to break this down, because look, I'm a logistics guy. I did that stuff for the Air Force. International logistics, especially air logistics, are extremely complicated. Before you throw in all the criminal elements and trying to hide it, you do a good job of breaking down a simple way of understanding it. Is there's upstream supply chain and downstream supply chain. Upstream, of course, is, you know, physically mining it, smelting it, the buyers and the traders, that sort of stuff. The downstream is the forwarding agents, the people that will procure it, that'll move it, and then eventually the consumer, whoever's actually going to buy this stuff, right? You break it down pretty simply, but the reason you need to understand that process and the reason we're taking time to go through it is, if you're going to do anything about Putin and Wagner, and you start talking about sanctioning, we've been sanctioning this stuff for decades, individuals and stuff. If you don't understand the difference between the upstream and the downstream supply chain and where you sanction and who you sanction and that sort of thing, talking about ways of getting into this are going to be pointless, because you got to understand the pressure points where you can actually get to the web of the stuff, what we can see, what we can't see. There's certain pressure points this stuff has to go through where it is visible, where we do know what it is, and that's where you can actually start to try to get at some of this.
Yeah, and there's an unwillingness, I would say, for Western officials to get to that place where they're putting pressure on the other players in the gold industry. That would be the UAE, India, Hong Kong, Saudi Arabia, Turkey. They have not leveled sanctions against many of the organizations involved in this web. And because they haven't, that means that those are the key places where you're able to try and legitimize the gold in question. And so that's like the next step of the equation is, okay, well, those countries are not sanctioning these companies involved. And that is ultimately where much of this gold is washed, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, David Clement, the Blood Gold Report. How much is the international order important here? Because we know the Russian oligarchs, from the foreign minister on down, there's all kinds of rumors about Putin's various family members, but a lot of them have their families. Some of them have their second families. How you doing, Larinoff? They all get put up in real fancy places in London, right? That's where they keep their families. A lot of the money goes through banks like in Frankfurt in Germany. The EU has some oversight here. You have a nice chart about how sanctions have kind of ramped up against Wagner and the various people about him. They are trying. They are cranking it up. It's getting increasingly more for what we understand about Wagner. But like you said, they just change shell companies. They move people around. They kill off Prezenic. They, you know, things like this happen. How important is that international order to keeping up with this? Because this really is something where some of these folks are living in the open. Some of this money's in the open. They're going through things like Deutsche Bank, which is a major player. They're going through London for a lot of these finances. The international order, this is really something where you're going to have an alliance to attack it, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You need real buy-in from government and from the private sector. And if not from the private sector, at the demand of government. So like just to conceptualize the size and scope of the problem. So between 2021 and 2022, the UAE went from importing 1.3 tons of Russian gold to 75.7 tons of Russian gold. So a massive, massive increase in that time. And the gold industry, the refinery industry in the UAE has largely avoided sanctions in that sense. And so they basically have a free hand to export Russian laundered gold to third parties, which also don't have sanctions. And that's where it continues down the line. And if you can get to the UAE and you can have gold refined from that point onward, and then you're moving more into legitimate businesses, and you have the global financial system then intertwined into it with what are or are not legitimate businesses, depending on the country we're talking about. That's where sanctions evasion really becomes a problem, because it's one thing if the government of Canada sanctions a particular company that's involved in this. But we're talking about global financial institutions. It requires more than one country doing one thing against one company to make this process stop.
Yeah, David Clement joining us. You actually break it down in the report. There's things working for Western sanctions and against Western sanctions. Sanctions sound great at the podium. They sound great when Congress or the Canadian Parliament or the UK Parliament or the EU or whoever lists them out. And they do work, especially against individuals in some cases. But give a couple of the real world reasons why sanctions are so hard. You already mentioned one of them. You can just send all your money to like the UAE and they handle it for you. And now it's laundered and you can go back and do it again and take a bank account out there. There's layers to this thing, but just for the normal person, when they hear sanctioned, What's a couple of things working against Western sanctions that they can watch for, even in the news headlines and things like that? Because this stuff's in the open if you're paying attention to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest example of how sanctions are hard is the case study of Mali, which is one of the countries that we focused on and is something that I was particularly focused on in my portion of the research, is that you have legitimate businesses, huge mining companies, two of which are Canadian, traded on the New York Stock Exchange and other exchanges internationally. And so with Mali as the example, they operate in Mali. Mali is a military dictatorship propped up by the Wagner forces. The Malian government gives the Wagner forces more than, I think it's like between 10 and 12 million US a month. So we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars since this relationship started, for security services. And the reason why it matters is the Western mining companies, the Canadian mining companies who operate there, and end up paying in taxes and royalties more than 50% of the government's budget. So the state in Mali is 50% funded by mining in the country, the taxes and royalties, and they, and then in hand turn that over to the Wagner, a portion of it to the Wagner forces. And so that is something that the sanction system that we have right now has been unable to address, even though we know that the amount of money paid in taxes just since Russia invaded Ukraine is probably about $1.8 billion to Mali's Russian-backed regime. But there's nothing in the sanctions portfolio, if you want to call it that, that tells the businesses who are making that process possible to knock it off or to cut it out. And so that's just a prime example of sanctions evasion that's completely stepped outside of what has been done sanctions wise so far, because it's done through essentially pulling taxes out of the mining industry and then handing over a good portion of that to the Wagner troops. Now in Mali, that is about to get a lot worse, because there was very recently a memorandum between Mali and the Russian government committed to open a new refinery, which means that all gold mined in Mali could eventually pass through a Russian refinery. And so that is a huge problem. It should be a huge problem. If you're a Western mining company and you're looking at the lay of the land, you know that your tax dollars are not only propping up a military government in Mali that's killing its own civilians and doing all sorts of terrible things. They're handing hundreds of millions of dollars over to the Wagner troops. And at some point in the near future, all the gold mined in the country is going to run through a Russian operation, which in the context of how we started this conversation, right, it's a Russian commerce internationally is very much that kleptocracy, oligarchy setup. And so those are almost always done to improve the purse of the Russian state. And that's where, with Mali being the case study, the sanctions just have not been able to yet put a dent in that setup. And just on one more point on Mali, not only could all Russian gold or all gold, sorry, go through a Russian facility in the near future, the taxes that have been paid in Mali have significantly increased year over year without any serious increase in mining activity. And so there you also have a military state able to generate more and more funds simply by demanding it. And so it's a problem that's outside of the sanctions and just continuously getting worse over time.
David Clement of the Blood Gold Report. We're going to link to the whole report again. It seems to me, and look, I'm one of the rare people that actually care about foreign policy, especially in America. We're just in a season where people just don't care. Look, it's cyclical. People are burned out. People don't pay attention to foreign policy. It seems to me, though, that we have a thing here, because anytime you talk sanctions, it's going to inevitably get into, you know, data crunching of numbers and bank accounts and stuff, and you lose the human factor of what's involved here. I think the push to make Wagner, at least, and some of the other people, and frankly, you can make the whole country of Russia right now a terrorist state, but that's, you know, that's pie in the sky shooting high. Declaring at least Wagner a terrorist organization and the people arranged with, this seems like something that could get a little bit of horsepower behind it. Look, I've got decades and decades of proof that the West just does not care about dying people in Africa. You got evidence, proves me wrong. Go ahead and bring it forth, because I haven't seen it. However, you know, we got video of what they do. They are a terrorist organization. There is a massive human toll. The mining itself is inhumane when you look at how most of these mines are run. Look, I'm a West Virginian. I know a little bit about mining. If you see any of the videos of how they actually do the mining here, it is inhumane. The people toll of the people of these places is just catastrophic. Maybe you can get enough viral video. Maybe you can get a little bit where at least a few people care. But it seems to me that declaring them a terrorist organization and going that route, you might actually get some human interest to start getting some movement that way, because the sanction stuff just turns into math too fast. And at least with terrorism, people understand, oh, terrorism, human cost. They can put that together in their head. How do we make that argument a little bit more effective and tie that to all this business and all this money and all this gold and all this money laundering and all the criminal element? Because at some point, you got to get it to a basic morsel soundbite to get people to care, right? Terrorism can kind of do that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think declaring Wagner as a terrorist organization would be a great start. I think for most people who understand what they do, that's a no-brainer. Anyone who has taken more than 5 minutes to look at how the Wagner forces operate abroad would see that they're certainly deserving of that title. That would be a good start. I do think that you're right in terms of that helps attach an appropriate label to how they operate, but one that is maybe a little more easily understood and can draw concern quicker in terms of how they operate. I would be fully on board with that designation. It's surprising that it's taken some countries a lot. They've just been kind of kicking the tires for a long time. But again, it's with sanctions, it's only one country doing something can only go so far. If you don't have other countries buying in, then the way to evade is to simply shift your operations to avoid those sanctions by targeting middlemen that don't designate you as a terrorist organization or haven't sanctioned your shell companies and things like that.
David Clement, the Blood Gold Report. Unfortunately, and we could talk about this for 3 hours because there's so many layers. You're going to have to do this. This is one of those issues where folks are going to kind of have to do their own media scrubbing to get to this information. I know the Blood Gold at Twitter has some good feeds. That's an ongoing feed, by the way. They have lots of stuff on there. What's some of the outlets? Because, look, getting reliable, you just mentioned it. One of the first things they do when Wagner goes in this country is they take over the local press and they suppress things. We've had reports in places like Sudan and Mali where they actually just take down the internet for times when something happens. They'll just cut it off for everybody.
Yeah.
Take down cell phone service around these mining areas. That's happened. It's something that happened in Syria as well. They don't want it out. It ain't going to get out. They'll keep it in. How can people keep up with this? Not just through the Blood Gold Report, but y'all had to draw from a lot of sources. Y'all had a hard time trying to get some of this information. How does the average person follow? Because look, the American, ABC, CBS, CNN, they're not sending reporters to really cover this very often, right? BBC can't cover the whole globe at the same time, right? How do folks keep up with something like this in a responsible way? Because there is a dearth of information, and purposely so.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, obviously, I would say first, starting with our report, is a great start. Following some of my colleagues online who are on this beat all the time is another good start. But it is an uphill battle, right? It's an uphill battle to get accurate information from some of these countries because they become very closed off, and that and what comes out media-wise is only what's approved. Just to draw a comparison, not that they're the same, but they are certainly similar, is that when you have the ability to shut down the internet or create a huge buffer zone around a particular mine while you're shutting down journalist operations and killing or imprisoning anyone who's seen as a dissenter in these countries, it increasingly becomes more like North Korea, where it's very difficult to know what is actually going on because there's state media, which is what the state wants you to know, and anyone who veers from that narrative is punished accordingly and often extremely severely. So it's I don't have a very good answer for you on that because it is so difficult to try and triangulate great sources for information here, because as this progress goes on and these relationships become more entrenched, it becomes more and more difficult to actually get good reporting from these countries. And as you mentioned, most of the major networks aren't able to send people to these countries for this reason, but for others. I mean, Sudan is right now the largest humanitarian crisis in the world, but even then it is still very difficult to get reporting going on because of the conflict and things like that. And then at the same time, who's signing up for the Mali assignment to go into Mali, regardless of whatever the danger pay may be, knowing that the guy checking your passport at the airport is entrenched in this system of ensuring that light is not shone on this growing problem. And so it is increasingly difficult to get to the bottom of what is going on and how this is progressing. But I mean, if we just take the playbook that we've seen so far in the Blood Gold system and forecast that, we have a good idea of the direction and where it's going, and that is not good.
Yeah, David Clement, I want to end talking about the human element a little bit, because we get into the policy and the geopolitics and it gets into that, you know, look, I'm guilty of it too. I'm a talking head. You know, we start talking about it almost detached from it, but you ended the report with the stats, you know, thousands of people killed, probably millions plus displaced because they pushed these people, you know, fleeing war. This is a long story in Africa of people coming in and exploiting it. But this is a new thing because it's not just the gold. There's the geopolitical parts of it. There's the funding of the war parts of it. There's the projecting of power. There's the zone of influence is how Putin calls it, but it's the same idea, right? Mm-hmm. The human cost of this, just for a moment, I think it's important to do things like the Blood Gold Report because we detach the geopolitics from the human suffering on the ground. But the geopolitics of what Putin's doing, we see the video from Ukraine, we've seen the video from Syria, but what they're doing to fund that is just as brutal as the actual live shooting wars. And it's a shooting civil war in a lot of these countries. It's basically civil war in a lot of them. Yeah. In a lot of ways. How do we tie that together? Because it really is an all of the above thing. If you really want to get to any kind of a solution or something to do about this problem, you have to understand it in the totality of like the brutalization on the battlefield starts with the brutalization of these local populations.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that is a great point. I think the way I would frame this is in terms of why you should care, right? So if you particularly care about Ukraine and their struggle against what is just a disgusting invasion by an imperialist, schizo fascist in Vladimir Putin. Well, you should care about this because it's helping continue that war. It's allowing for the Russians to fund the ability to dig their heels in and be limited less by money and more by how many young men they can throw into the meat grinder. And that's the position that the war is in now. And so if you care about Ukraine, you should care. If you care about the developing world, the spread of democracy, the spread of liberal values in the context of free and or open societies, well, then you should care, because the only reason why all of this is possible in Africa is because you have these awful dictator military junta regimes propped up on the bidding of Putin and the Kremlin. So if you care about the struggle and the strife of some of the most impoverished people in the world, as you should, well, the Russians are part of the problem in perpetuating that cycle of crisis, of turmoil, of poverty. And I mean, there are too many to go through. The list of atrocities committed by the Wagner forces is only growing. But there was a mass grave discovered where Kremlin-backed mercenaries killed, I think, 50 or 60 civilians in a small town and arrested 500 bystanders in collaboration with the soldiers of Mali and local militias. And like that type of egregious human rights violations, war crimes, however you want to call it, exists all the time. So if you care about those whom are the least well off in our global community, and you want to end that cycle, you should care about what the Russians are doing in these countries, because they're only perpetuating that cycle of poverty and turmoil and chaos. And if you care about the conduct of Western business abroad, you care about the values or the supposed values of how companies that carry the American flag or the Canadian flag are supposed to do business around the world, well, then you should care about how companies like Barrick Gold or B2 are operating in these countries and giving the excuse that this is just the cost of doing business, which is a remarkably weak justification for knowingly engaging in a system that empowers a brutal military government in Mali, propped up by the Kremlin, which profits the worst of the Kremlin's henchmen, who do the ugliest things on the battlefield and elsewhere. And so I would frame this under those kind of three categories in terms of why you should care. And I think that for most Canadians, most Americans, most listeners, they probably fall into one of those buckets. And those are just the major reasons why this is a big problem. It's a growing problem. It's getting worse. And some coherent, concrete steps have to be made in order to do something about this.
Yeah, it's well said. Look, anytime you've got somebody running roughshod over people, usually you follow the money, you get to the truth of it. And that's exactly what the Blood Gold Report's doing here. We know Putin's a bad guy. We know Wagner's a bad guy. We know they're doing all kinds of bad things. But when you follow the money, it makes it really crystal clear just how bad, how widespread. And you just mentioned it, who's complicit, who's enabling it, and who's turning a blind eye to it. We're not doing that. We're talking about it. BloodGoldReport.com, Blood Gold Report on the Twitter. Let folks know where they can follow what you got going on in the future. Because again, this isn't just a report. This is an ongoing way to kind of keep up with this. Let folks know how they can follow you, keep up with the Blood Gold Report stuff, and stay up to date until we get you back on Herd Tell again, my friend.
You follow me on Twitter at Clement Liberty. You'll see some of the Blood Gold stuff as well as other things that I'm working on. I'd also encourage you to follow my colleagues who have helped write this, in particular Jessica Berlin, who is one of the best sources for information in regards to Russia's war on Ukraine. Those would be your best bets. Obviously, bloodgoldreport.com. Read the report if you have the time, and keep a lookout for more of our engagement on the issue as it continues to grow and build.
Yeah, David Clement, appreciate the time. Important conversation. We'll have you back soon, my friend. Thank you for the time.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Herd Tell. Normally, we would end on a good note after something this heavy, but I need to talk about this Vladimir Putin thing for just a second. There's been a lot of reports about his health. He's getting up there in age. Vladimir Putin will not live forever. Whenever he passes off the scene, though, we need to have a realistic expectation of what happens after that. There's no succession plan. He hasn't named a successor, nor can he really, because the second he does, he puts himself in jeopardy. He can't walk away because, by some accounts, Vladimir Putin might be the richest man in the world because of all the undue money that he has, all the dirty money he sits upon. He may be the richest man in the world. He's certainly one of the most powerful, especially considering he has almost no restraints. The people he does answer to, though, the oligarchs that keep him in power, we need to all understand something. Whatever comes after Vladimir Putin is probably going to be worse, because the guy that gets that job is going to pitch it to the oligarchs as, you know, Vlad's problem really was he just really didn't commit to it. He didn't really want to fight the West. He didn't really want to do this, that, or the other. So the idea that something's going to get better after Putin is probably pie in the sky Pollyanna policy. It's probably going to be worse. It'll probably be even less restrained in some ways. Now, it's not all doom and gloom, because Russia, we've seen their military, especially their Navy, is pretty much a paper tiger. They're not nearly as powerful as they project to be. They have a lot of men. They have a lot of material. They can just, you know, human wave you for a while. That's the problem in Ukraine. Ukraine just can't keep up with the sheer manpower getting thrown at them. Technologically wise, they're hanging in there. But they also have some real geopolitical spider webs that have to be cleaned out if you're going to really effectively deal with Russia. Part of the problem with the Ukraine conflict is it's pushed Russia very, very close to China. Now, this is not an equal partnership. People talking about, you know, Dragon Bear, they're getting a little ahead of themselves. China wants Russia as a debtor nation to China, because remember, China's got their own problems. They got a population issue, and their economy has somewhat peaked out and is going to start on the downhill. So they're going to have a hard time projecting all the power they've built up and all the infrastructure they've built up, because their economy is getting ready to go through a dip and they have a demographic problem that's coming up upon them. But them having Russia and all those natural resources of Russia, especially the oil and gas industry, as a debtor nation to them is an important piece when you start thinking about who comes after Vladimir Putin. The other piece you need to think about when we start talking about post-Vladimir Putin is that you can get to Russia economically. We didn't win the Cold War just militarily, although we did a big military buildup and, you know, nuclear deterrence kept everybody's head, thank God. But financially, Russia's in really, really dire straits, especially after several years of war in the Ukraine and the sanctions, and it's cut them off from a lot of things. They're really hurting. Now, they're not completely hurting, because there's still countries in, you know, the West and Western Europe, looking at you, Germany, who are very dependent on the gas and oil from Russia to feed their economic engines. This is their own fault, of course. They should have tried to get out of being dependent on Russia for oil and gas quite some time ago. They didn't. here they are. So you have people like Olaf Scholz and the German government. Look, I love Germany. I lived there twice. This is just the reality of it. Their biggest foreign policy with Russia is, can we get back to business as usual as quickly as possible? Please stop acting the fool so we can go back to just getting your gas. Not that they don't care about human rights, but they have to have the energy component to be the economic engine for the entire EU. That's who Germany is. These are those spider webs I'm talking about. You can get after a dictator in non-military ways, but you have to have consistent, coherent foreign policy, which is something at least the last couple of presidents we've had have not been good at. And I'm somewhat dubious that in the future we will be good at. We need a consistent, coherent policy that keeps from enabling and appeasing people like Vladimir Putin into doing things like invading Ukraine. And I fear that there just isn't an appetite for that sort of effort right now. The problem is, if you don't do that, it'll eventually build until it gets worse and worse. And you wind up with a massive shooting war in Ukraine. And you wind up with Wagner taking over huge chunks of Africa. And you wind up with things like China impressing and imploring their power out in the South Pacific and elsewhere. The world does not stop turning based on partisan politics in the United States of America. That's why we will continue to take time to look at these issues, to try to broaden our worldview, to understand what's really going on in the world and cover these things. Because even if we can't get our government to do the right things about it, at least we won't be surprised when the world really does go to hell in a handbasket. That'll do it for Herd Tell. Please make sure you're following us wherever you're watching or listening, whether you're watching on the YouTube channel, listening, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Spotify, whatever the case may be. We sure appreciate you. Make sure you're following and subscribing. If you give us a share on your other social media platforms, we'd really appreciate that. Herdtell.substack.com, one-stop shopping for everything we do. So, until we see you next time on Herd Tell, wherever you and yours are, across the street or around the world, we hope you're well. We hope you're well fed, and we'll talk to you again soon for more Herd Tell. All the music on Herd Tell is provided under a creative content license from MonsterCat.com. Somos la máquina.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.